Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome into Behind Enemy Lines, a collaboration between the Paul Farrington Show and the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Paul, joined by Robert Ziggy Ziegler and Andy Herman to recap some really exciting, but also fairly disappointing, and Ziggy and I's case, very disappointing. Andy, we'll see. I mean, I know how you're feeling, but we'll hear how you're feeling about that Packer-Cowboy 40-40 tie thriller in just a second. If you're enjoying this content, we've had a great start to the year with Behind Enemy Lines. Please remember to like, comment, and subscribe to the Paul Farrington Show and to the Pack-A-Day Podcast as we continue on the 2025 NFL season here. And guys, week one, I'm starting to come to the realization that week one may wind up being the only week where we do this show where we are all happy. That's kind of how it's starting to feel a little bit. So let's start with the Packers and the Cowboys. And Andy, you know, as the Packer guy here, I will have a lot of questions. But where do you stand right now after a tie? Are you feeling, have you talked yourself back into the Packers as a Super Bowl contender, or are you kind of just figuring this out?
No, I still certainly, I've never wavered. I still think they're a Super Bowl contender. It's a disappointing tie. It's a really fun game. I want to talk to you guys about that in just a moment. I will say, as you mentioned, that week one, maybe the only week we get, I expected with this collaboration that at this point in the season, the Vikings and the Packers had a combined 4 wins. I was just expecting it to be 4-0 Packers and 0-3-1 Vikings at this point, and it's not going exactly as I expected it. So I'm not surprised that combined we have 4 wins. It's just how we've gotten there. That's maybe the more surprising aspect of it. But actually, before I get into disappointment or whatever, I want to ask you, how was that game from your perspective? Just from like, I get like that had to have been one of the coolest games to watch without having, I know as a Vikings fan, you always have stake in it of like, you know, Packers losing good, but as like not a Packers fan or a Cowboys fan in that game, that had to have been one of like just the great all time Sunday night football games.
Oh, I thought it was a total blast. I was watching it actually with a Cowboy fan who's one of my good friends, and we're watching the game and it's just like, both of us are standing up, you know, and I have no affiliation really with what's going on. I'm getting ready to do the post game show, but it was just like this thing. Yeah, I think you said, Andy, in your reaction, I was listening to like, let's have this go on forever. It was just two quarterbacks who are red hot, two defenses that couldn't do anything about it, and a lot of excitement. I loved it. I don't know about you, Ziggy.
I mean, it's just always weird when a game ends in a tie. It feels like the game is, you know, me, Paul, you talked about this going on forever. It feels like the game will never end. Like one of these teams should be winning the football game. I mean, it was an absolute blast to watch. It reminded me of that Rams Chiefs. I think it was Monday night football game a number of years ago. I think that was in 2018, but yeah. It would have been more fun to see the Packers lose. Seeing them get a tie, I feel like there was some kind of like final arc left uncompleted. Still a great game.
I will say, Andy, I don't know if like at the very end there, when you guys are driving in overtime, as soon as you got to what you got to like the 15, right, or the 13, with like a minute and change left, I was like, all right, this is like Jordan's gonna find Dobbs again for the fourth touchdown. Like this is over. The fourth and six, the conversion to Golden, that was the one time in the game really where I kind of thought the Packers were gonna lose. And then all of a sudden, like watching that clock tick down and over the final like 20 seconds of the game, it really did feel like the Bears-Lions Thanksgiving game last year when all of a sudden there was 6 seconds left and the ball snapped. And I like was looking around like someone has to do something. Someone has to tell him. And you guys did get just so fortunate if that ball's not tipped up in the air or, you know, or whatever happens. That would have been, could you imagine like your reaction and the Green Bay media reaction if the time had ran out and that's a loss?
Yeah, I can, because I thought it was going to happen. Matt LaFleur explained it perfectly in his press conference today. He said, it was like watching a slow motion car crash in front of your face. It felt like there's going to be no time left, and said it's going to be basically teaching tape across the league of what not to do for teams moving forward. That's what it felt like. You're watching the clock and then you almost hope Jordan has the wherewithal of like to get the snap and just spike it to be like, all right, we clearly don't have enough time to get this playoff. And then like he drops back and then he like scans and you're like, oh my God, like this is touchdown or bust. And the great job by the announce team of being like, this is it right here. This is the whole play. And like, you're thinking it, and then you see it's incomplete and your eyes are sort of like simultaneously on the play and on the clock and you're just going back and forth and you see the incompletion and there's a 1,000,000% chance that that final second ticks off right after. You're just waiting like that going from one until your anticipation of zero felt like 1,000,000 seconds of just waiting for it. Like it's clearly going to turn to zero any second. Like you just, you know, it's coming and then it doesn't come. And you're like, how did that extra second not tick off? There's no way that person still has a job in Dallas after that. It doesn't come off. Right. But it was unbelievable to see the lack of urgency, to see just getting in that situation. Paul, I agree with both of the things that you said. The golden play on fourth down, with that fourth down and fourth and six, I was definitely like, this is not going to end well. That's when I kind of felt like I do not have a good feeling about this. And then as soon as they got, it was like first and 10 from the 25 with plenty of like 2 minutes left, a timeout. And I'm like, oh, they got this. This is easily going to be a win. And then to see it get to the point where you're like, they might not even have time to kick the field. It was remarkably how inept they were at managing that situation.
Ziggy, Andy, what I wanted to ask you is because a lot of people are looking at that sequence of events, right? And they're saying that's on, you know, we got to blame LaFleur too. Like for as much as you can blame the players for not being aware of the time, and you have to get up. And if you're Jordan Love, you have to be able to understand what that situation is. He had a great game, but that moment was, I mean, almost cost them the game. But as far as Matt LaFleur goes, I'm seeing a lot of Packer fans. I mean, they are obviously they're furious at Rich Bisaccia, but I'm seeing a lot of Packer fans too, who are just coming out and saying like, you know, LaFleur can't handle the moment, and LaFleur, he's reached his ceiling with this team. Do you feel that way at any point?
Yeah. So I want to touch on the Love thing first. What I'm curious about with Jordan is what autonomy, if any, does he have in that situation? Like that's something where Jordan and Matt have got to get together this week and say, hey, in this scenario, you can or should do this. Cause it felt like Jordan didn't feel like he could just get everyone up to the line of scrimmage and get that next play in. It felt like he had to check over with Matt. What are we doing? What's the play call? It felt like there was a lot of steps that were taking place there that simply can't take place in that scenario. So I would love to know if Jordan has the autonomy just to be like, everyone up the line of scrimmage, I'm taking command here. I don't care what play you want to call or what you want to do. It's my time now. We don't have time for anything else. And if he doesn't have that, he needs to have it moving forward. If he does have that, then he definitely needed to exercise it in that situation. And it just didn't happen. So either way, it needs to be 1,000,000,000% better. As far as Matt goes, I think we are prisoners of the moment where we all want immediate gratification. The season is so short, which is what makes it so great. We're a quarter of the way into the season. And certainly Matt and Goody and the entire Packers organization, when you make that move for Micah Parsons, you know the pressure that you're under to go out and meet and exceed expectations this year. I don't think this first quarter of the season is where anyone has wanted it to be, especially after two really big wins to start the year. So they understand what this is, but to me, this is still very much a work in progress as a team. I expect some of these things to get corrected. The thing that I'm most frustrated by is the fact that you had a catastrophic blocked kick against Cleveland to lose the game. And then a week later, as Matt mentioned today, and as you go back and watch it, the very first extra point in this game was this close to being blocked. So not only did you screw it up a week ago, but on the very first kick of the game, it's almost screwed up again. So they almost give you the warning shot, and it's not like a different area. It came from the exact same spot. So they're giving you the warning shot of like, here's what's going to come. And then for the very next play, you don't fix it. You don't have the wherewithal to make that happen in real time. To me is where I would put this with Matt. There are some red flags right now. The time management, the game management, even if you go like challenges have been an issue for him in the past, some of that stuff where it almost feels like when the emotion takes over for Matt, that's where some bizarre stuff starts to happen. I think he needs to be a little bit more calculated and assassin-like. In earlier in his career, it felt like he was very analytically driven. What does the analytics say to do in this situation? And we're running with it. I think honestly, he would be really well, you know, he would do well to just almost go more with that approach and to be like, you know what, we're taking the emotional stuff out of this and we're going with what the analytics say, just to have a vision and a purpose behind what you're doing. Right now, it just feels like it's floating with the wind, whatever direction it may be going in that scenario. And even today he said, you know, my gut said, don't go for it at the end of the first half and just get into halftime. And he's like, I kind of went away from my gut and we went for it anyway. And that's where you have the catastrophic fumble that gets, you know, recovered and then they get a touchdown before half. So I just think they need to be a little bit more calculated with all of that. And I'm still all in on this team. I think Matt's going to do a great job. I think they're going to go like 4-0 in their next four games. And everyone's going to be talking about like, yeah, like Matt should be in the coach of the year conversation. Mm-hmm. And like, we'll swing exactly back the other way. If it doesn't, if we get to the point where this team does not meet expectations when they're ultimately going to be judged come playoff time, all right, let's have these conversations. I think for now, it's just gut reaction fest. Mm-hmm.
The thing that would be tough for me though, Andy, if I were a Packers fan, is that you can go back to last season and you can see people were saying exactly the same things. There was the Bears game to close the season. There was the Eagles game at the start of the year. Like, this has been a persistent trend. And I guess if I'm a Packers fan sitting back here, you know, it's, I can understand being patient, saying he's been a good coach in a lot of different ways, but what evidence do we have that this is going to get fixed at a certain point? Because it seems to me, as an outsider, like it's the same issue and we're just waiting until later in the season when it costs them again.
Fair point.
I could even see,
I have no rebuttal to it.
Yeah, I could even see you guys being upset with the response from LaFleur as well, right? Because I was reading, he said operation was just too slow. I don't know if the guys didn't know we were in the 2-minute drill or what. Communication has to be better. Myself to Jordan to the huddle. That's the bottom line. Like, you hear that, and that just sounds. Now I hear you talking about his gut at the end of the first half and not following it. You know, we give Dan Campbell a lot of flack sometimes for his decision making, but you know that whatever he thinks is best, they are going to do it and they're going to die on that hill. And there is something that is admirable in that like the 49er game, NFC Championship didn't work out, but that's who he is and he doesn't waver for it. And in those big moments, you know, okay, the Lions are going to go for the kill here. And Green Bay in this situation, I think it was a reflection of how the head coach is speaking right now. Maybe that last play was actually a great reflection of the end of the half too, where it's like, all right, what do we want to do here? And how can you not, you know, the two minutes left in the game, it sounds like that entire 2 minutes, LaFleur didn't know what he wanted to do. So that's a little concerning, I think. Fortunately, you know, he's been around a while. I'm not like, if this was a first or second year head coach, maybe there are different reactions, but at the same time, this is a six or seventh year head coach, right? In Green Bay, or maybe longer.
Yep.
So you're like, all right, we got to figure this thing out here. Like, this is a team that's talented enough to win. We cannot be losing games to the Browns and to the Cowboys because of, you know, situational failures. So I would totally understand why Packers fans are having this reaction. I agree with you though, that it's a bit too strong right now.
It's a bit too early. It's a bit too strong. I agree with both of you guys of where these have been issues that have been there in the past, which is why I think it's a red flag. I also think it's interesting of like, I think most Packers fans put Dan Campbell on that pedestal and say like, look what he's doing and how aggressive. I want that. I want that too. I'm not saying it's the wrong way, but it is interesting that like, Dan Campbell is not exactly the picture of playoff success when it comes yes. to how they've done so far. And meanwhile, the coach who just won the Super Bowl is known as being one of the most emotional reactionary coaches in the league in Nick Sirianni. And they just won the Super Bowl. So I'm just, my point being is that there's not a perfect situation or scenario. You have to, at some point you have to trust what you're feeling on the sidelines. I think Matt needs to be more calculated. And I think, like I said, there's enough red flags here where if this stays the way that it is and it doesn't get fixed, yeah, we're probably going to look at some of these things popping up again, and it very well could cost him in the playoffs. And if it does, then that's very much going to, you know, fall on the shoulders of Matt LaFleur in that situation.
I want to ask you about the defense, Andy, because it was such a bizarre, you know, we talk about enjoying watching the game, but you know, I feel like for us, we're watching the game. We're also, you're paying attention to so many different things because we have to talk about it right after. And when I'm watching the defense in the second half, and I'm like, what the hell is going on with the Green Bay Packers? You know, 3 weeks, you're the best defense in football. And really, most of that first half, you guys were dominating them. I know Schottenheimer said the blocked extra point gave them a boost. You know, the next drive after the blocked extra point, they went 3-and-out. Like, it was really more of a second half problem, or, you know, right before halftime when they scored. But I'm looking at Nate Hobbs and he's struggling. And then I'm seeing all the Packers people calling for Carrington Valentine. And even I was like put Carrington Valentine in the game. Then he starts getting beat. Yep. And, you know, the pass rush wasn't getting there outside of Micah, who people seem to not think was actually having a really good game, even though he had, what, 6 or 7 pressures towards the end. But
yep.
Right now, when you look at the Packer defense, do you think, like, is there actual cause for concern moving forward here, whether it be the pass rush or that cornerback room that we highlighted before the season started? We were saying the cornerback room could be an issue. And, you know, George Pickens tore him apart.
Yeah, Pickens definitely had a huge day. I watched this back. I watched every play on defense and went through and graded that already. And it was really interesting because I was expecting to see some fatal flaws, some big issues. Dallas found some flaw in Jeff Hafley's system or things like that. I didn't really see it. I did see some issues on the cornerback room. I didn't think Valentine, Hobbs, or even Nixon for that extent had good games in this one. I thought Dallas's wide receivers played them well, especially Pickens, and I didn't think Green Bay responded to it. They played press in some certain situations and allowed way too free of releases. In other situations, they played off too far. It was just a very disjointed game from the corners. It also had a feel of like every single time Green Bay got pressure is when they just allowed like one like safety or like one valve to be open, and they like Dak found that person every single time.
He was
and
great,
the times where Dak. They didn't get pressure, like the coverage was good, but they didn't get pressure. And then, you know, Dak had more time to roll out and throw the crazy ball down the field where the receiver came back to. Like, it did feel a little bit like, I don't want to say unlucky, give Dallas their credit. I thought Dak was incredible in this game, but it just, every single thing just went like a quarter degree in the wrong direction almost every time. And all of a sudden you ended up with 40 points. The other thing I'll say is to your point earlier, this started for Dallas punt, punt, punt. So they went 3 drives with 3 and out, 5 and out, 3 and out. Then they really put together a great 11 play, 95 yard touchdown drive. And then to open the second half, it was another punt. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 drives, 5 of their first true drives, they scored 1 touchdown and punted immediately on the other 4. The only one that I didn't mention in there was the 1 play touchdown drive right before halftime off of the fumble where they shouldn't have been in that position in the first place. And we don't know how things change over the course of time based on that, but Green Bay in the third quarter, to start the third quarter, gets Dallas 5 plays, 9 yards, punt, and then immediately goes and scores a touchdown after that. If it's not for that gift touchdown, it's 20-9 at that point, which should be 21-7 at that point, had it not been for the blocked extra point return for a 2-pointer as well. I just wonder if Dallas is not able to stay as multiple, if all of a sudden they have to get pass heavy, if Green Bay makes them more predictable, they can get in some of their, you know, packages where they get more of their pass rushers on the field. I just wonder if we're not talking about a big victory for Green Bay and shutting down that Dallas offense. Instead, 2 really dumb plays in the first half when you dominated up until that point gives Dallas all the life they need. They're able to stay in the game, run the football. And yes, I didn't think they played great, but I didn't think there was any catastrophic issues from this defense. I think they're going to be fine. But if there is anything, the corner play definitely gives me a little bit of pause.
We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, you and I make decisions every day, but on Prize Picks, being right can get you paid. Don't miss any of the excitement this season on Prize Picks, where it is good to be right. Now, Green Bay has a bye in week 5, which is why it's even more thrilling to get in on all the action on Prize Picks. With no home team to cheer for, it's always more exciting when you're cheering on some of your favorite players in Prize Picks. This week, I'm going with Jahmyr Gibbs to have a big game in Cincinnati, Derrick Henry to have a monster game on the ground against Houston, and Danny Dimes to bounce back big and get a win against Las Vegas. Now, here's the best part. Prize Picks is the only app that offers stacks, meaning you can pick the same player up to 3 times in the same lineup. Want to pick more on Josh Allen's passing yards, rushing yards, and touchdowns? Now you can pick all of them in the same lineup only on Prize Picks. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget to use that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. Hey friends, football season is here, and that means you're going to want to have a VPN set up to make sure that you are ready to watch the right sporting events that aren't always available in your region. I'll be honest with you guys, a few years ago, I didn't even know what a VPN was. Now, I use my VPN daily for a variety of different reasons, including protecting my private data, changing my browsing location, and having the best premium cybersecurity at all times. And that's why I use NordVPN. NordVPN is the fastest VPN in the world, which means no buffering or lagging while streaming. Plus, world-class cybersecurity, the ability to utilize it on up to 10 different devices, and a VPN that I know is going to work every single time. There's simply no better choice than NordVPN. So here's what you need to do. Go to nordvpn.com/packer to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan. That link, nordvpn.com/packer, will also give you 4 extra months on their 2-year plan. There's zero risk with NordVPN's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the podcast episode description. So what are you waiting for? Go to nordvpn.com/packer today and get NordVPN right now.
Yeah, I thought watching throughout the game, it felt like one where Green Bay just had more costly mistakes than Dallas did. And
agreed.
Like you know, it could, as you said, this could have been over at halftime. And all of a sudden, you blinked your eyes. You're like, it was kind of like, how are the Cowboys winning this football game? And then, you know, it turns into a shootout where Dak was pressured 9 times total in the game. And he went 7 for 9, 94 yards and a touchdown with 147.2 passer rating.
He was really good.
Like, you heard Mike after the game saying, you know, go watch the tape. 4 was just unbelievable today. And Dak's someone who can get hot like that. And when he does, he's as good as anyone in the league. So I think you're right. I wouldn't panic too much about the Packer defense. I think they'll be fine. It just, you got caught up in one of those games with one of those quarterbacks in one of those moments. And I mean, it made for a fun watch, but it certainly made for one tough watch of the Green Bay defense for Packer fans. All right.
There's a chance, just really quick, that Green Bay's defense does not play that bad the rest of the season as they did in Dallas, and that Green Bay's offense does not play as bad all season as they did in Cleveland. That's the hope, at least. But like in back-to-back games, you had sort of your come to Jesus / humbling moment of, you know, hey, you still got to work every single week, especially when you're going against a really good defense like Cleveland and a really good offense like Dallas. Even if their teams aren't great in totality, both those sides of the ball are, and you still have to show up to work and really get the job done, or you're going to get humbled in this league.
Before we move on to, I get the sense of moving on to the Minnesota Vikings, and I want to stall that as much as possible. I've got one more question to get to. We were looking at some unnamed sports books before the start of this segment, and one thing I discovered was that the Packers and the Lions are being given exactly the same odds to win the NFC North at a couple of them. So these questions about consistency surrounding them, the way the Packers and the Lions are trending, my question for you, Andy, you're a Packers fan, but try and take the Packers fan hat off if you can. Who do you trust to play? Winning a division is all about consistency. Who do you trust to play more consistently the rest of the season? Is it going to be the Lions sort of recovering from their slower start to the year, or the Packers going to be able to get both sides of the ball to play well at the same time?
I would personally take Detroit just because I think that they're experienced in knowing exactly what you need to do through the marathon of a season and playing a little bit more consistently and not maybe having that roller coaster of up and downs. But I will say this, I think that those odds are exactly how I feel. And like, if anyone's concerned of this Packers team, like not being in the discussion at the end or not going toe to toe with the Lions the rest of the way, I really truly believe that this is going to be a team that has basically 4 get right games over the course of the next 4 weeks and starts to put together a run. Like, this is a team that is going to have a lot of turnovers, force a lot of turnovers. They've basically forced like none so far. Turnovers are going to start to come. They get Cincinnati at home right after the bye week. And I don't know that there's many other teams I'd rather play than Cincinnati right now. You go at Arizona. It won't be easy, but that's a very winnable game. You go at Pittsburgh. That'll be an emotional game. I know Pittsburgh's playing well, as you guys found out last week, but, that's still a game that I feel Green Bay has every right to win. And then you get Carolina at home. I mean, that should be 3-1 at worst, to be fair. I thought the last 2 weeks should be 2-0 at worst. And that certainly did not happen, but I do feel like they're going to bounce back. And we're going to talk about this team right there with Detroit as the 1-2 to potentially win this division.
To be fair as well, we didn't mention this. Like, Jordan Love was unbelievable in this game. Like, or we didn't give, you know, any long segment on this, but he was great. That, like, he looked like a Super Bowl caliber quarterback on Sunday Night Football. It was against arguably the worst defense in the league, but a nice bounce back for him after, you know, a game where the offense really struggled in Cleveland. But Andy, I'm going to say something that probably the people listening will not be happy about this, but it's just how I feel right now. I am moving Green Bay off the top tier right now to the top of tier two of NFC contenders for me. Okay. And it's not because I don't think that this is more like a timeout sort of a thing. Cause I, it's not that I don't think they can win the Super Bowl. It's not that I don't think they have a great roster. I still believe all that stuff, but right now where it stands, the teams I have on that top tier, Philly has been to two of the last three Super Bowls, right? They've been consistently awesome. Other than that one weird like 9-game stretch 2 years ago. The Lions have been to an NFC championship game and 15 wins last year, the one seed. And now they're, you know, they've responded really well to that week one loss. Those are two teams that have just consistently been really, really good. And I'm putting Green Bay down just for a couple weeks here, right? They have the bye. We'll see what happens when they come back against Cincinnati. I feel like they're going to respond strongly, but I just want to see it before I'm willing to. I think we got a little bit ahead of ourselves with how well they were playing. Like, there are ups and downs in a football season, and they were playing so well that it was clear to everyone, like, all right, they look like this. They're the team to beat. But after the past 2 weeks, I just want to see the response and have them, you know, prove it again, that they could play consistently well on both sides of the ball for an extended period of time before I move them back up there. Is that too harsh, or do you think that's fair?
If there's anyone that deserves a timeout right now, it's the Green Bay Packers. They are in the corner. They're deserving of said timeout. I have no issue with that whatsoever. And right now, and to your point, you know, where you've seen some of these teams like Detroit and Philly be much more consistent with Green Bay, it's like, pull out the magic eight ball and shake it up and see, what are we going to get this week? And it's like, oh, it's major special teams blunder. All right. Like, yeah, you know, Jordan Love's going to have a bizarro decision at the end of the game. All right, shake it up. All right. The defense is going to be amazing this week, but you just have no idea what you're going to get from any side of this Packers team. And in the end, it ends up being pretty good overall. But until you know what your identity is and what sort of consistency they're going to play with, yeah, it's fair to question, can they win four games in a row if they need to in the divisional, wild card, championship game, and Super Bowl to get to where they want to go? I think that's a real question mark. So give them all the timeouts you want to give them at this point in time.
Okay, good. I'm glad, because I know people are going to come in and be like, what are you talking about? Like, did you see what we did to Detroit week one? And I just want to see it. I just want to see it extend a little bit. So
you can give the Packers all the timeouts you want. I'm not sure Matt LaFleur is going to use them very well.
Uh-oh.
Oh, man.
That's well done. Ziggy.
All right, let's...
That's well done. That's not a skull, by the way. That's me clapping.
I was going to say, I thought you were giving the skull for a second to move on to the Vikings.
Clap, soccer clap, not a skull, just for the record.
we'll take you out.
That's going to get clipped now of me doing this, and it's going to... Yeah,
1,000%. We'll take you out of the misery of the tie. And at least it's a tie, right? That's one nice thing, is it wasn't a loss like the Vikings had in Pittsburgh. Did you wake up for that game, Andy? Did you watch it?
I was up. I was actually driving my son from to soccer, and I had the game on the radio for the majority of it. And then when I got to the game, I was watching kind of the end of it. So did definitely see the end. I did not see the little bit of the comeback in the middle where the Vikings cut it to 3 points, was it?
Yeah.
So I didn't see the little comeback where Wentz threw a couple touchdown passes, but I did see Herbig and Watt and company destroying shop up front for a little bit, and got to see obviously the result of it.
Yeah, well, you didn't miss too much. It wasn't a particularly great game. For anyone who doesn't know, the Steelers beat the Vikings 24-21 over in Dublin. Our first European loss, Siggy. First time the Vikings have ever lost internationally, actually, which was really disappointing. We were predicting Kevin O'Connell would split the G of his Guinness mid-third quarter as the Vikings were terrorizing Aaron Rodgers. Wasn't quite the case. It turned into just... It was a tough watch, and after rewatching the game, though, you know, Carson Wentz, he threw for 350 yards. Like, the Viking offense did move the ball up and down the field pretty well throughout the day. The problem was, and this is what I was talking to Ziggy about before we started the show, is it felt like the entire game we're living in 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, you know, even 3rd and 15, where our second down plays throughout the day We'd have second and seven every time, and it would be a negative 2 yard run or a false start or a legal man downfield. And it was just the same, like, you know, the same mistakes adding up to a Wentz sack or a Wentz interception fumble. And it was the same story the whole game. It was, we moved the ball downfield, we put ourselves in third and long, and then Carson Wentz does as Carson Wentz typically has done in his career. He makes some sort of big mistake with the football in his hands, and next thing you know, we're punting or we're setting up Pittsburgh on a short field. And it kind of made a decent performance from the offense look really bad, because they just had these implosions at moments, and very frustrating to watch. Ziggy, did you feel similarly?
I mean, frustrating is certainly how I felt. I think you might be giving Carson Wentz a little bit too much credit. We were certainly able to move the ball up and down the field. We'd put together an 11 or a 12 play drive, and then there would be an interception. It felt like that was a major theme of the day too. I mean, look, this is who the Minnesota Vikings are. It's who they've always been. They'll struggle out the gate. They'll give you just enough hope at the end to think something good is going to happen, and then they will let you down. You know, I'm in Iceland right now, and you get to see all of these areas that the Vikings conquered. You can go into places where they used to live. It's like, this is the last time the Vikings actually succeeded at doing something. This is the last time this was a relevant concept. Like, now it just feels like we're history. So, you know, it was easy to get excited at the start of last week, and I think I did. I let the fact we beat up on the Bengals, who are maybe worse than we thought they were, get me excited. This was a hugely deflating loss, and I'm sure the team feels exactly the same way.
Yeah, it's hard to have a lot of confidence moving forward on the season. What I did, Andy, after the game is I came out and was just like, it needs to be a complete readjustment of the expectations, which I think we had already gotten there after the first couple weeks. But if you want to be actually be a contender, like, we should probably be able to beat the Steelers, who they really struggled against. You know, even the Patriots, who they beat, but they forced five turnovers, and the Jets, who looked horrendous on Monday Night Football, took them to the wire. Pittsburgh has not been a really good team this year, and for 3.5 quarters, they were kind of kicking our butt. The score wound up making it look close, but, you know, Wentz was sacked 6 times. The offense really did nothing through. I mean, we said they moved up and down the field well, but then something bad would happen. So that, you know, that's part of the game. I just think we need to look at this as, when McCarthy gets back, hopefully he's playing his best football in November and December, and we can be sold on him as a starting QB next year. That's my hope now.
Yeah, I think, you know, from a Vikings standpoint, and we're experiencing this in Green Bay as well, man, offensive line matters so freaking much. And you finally get Darisaw back, and then Brian O'Neill goes down, obviously missing Jackson in this game as well. And, you know, when you're already down to your backup quarterback, Aaron Jones isn't playing, and you're trying to get any semblance of offense going against a Steelers team that gives up a lot of yards, but they make up for it in sacks and turnovers and explosive plays on their end. And it's just like, yeah, Wentz got sacked 6 times, had 2 interceptions, was under pressure. And I think if we probably would have said going into this game that Wentz throws the ball 46 times, you would have probably been like, that's probably not a recipe for, you know, success in this one. And that's just what it ended up being. I will say, you know, seeing Jefferson and Addison back together, that does still have the striking the fear of God into any defense of just like, I don't want to deal with that. That's a problem. And they both go over 100 in this game. That's going to make life easier for any quarterback. But unless the offensive line can play a little bit better, and I know O'Neill, you get good news for the most part that it's not an IR injury or is going to be out for any extended period of time. But until that offensive line gets back, Jones gets back, and you can, and we'll see what they do with the Wentz-McCarthy situation. It just feels like you're trying to buy time until you can find that rhythm and consistency. And again, as we know in Green Bay, without your full offensive line, it just makes it really, really difficult.
Yeah. And the game started off kind of exactly as I was expecting it to go. You know, like, we have Redmond burst through the Steelers offensive line to start the game, sacks Rodgers, they go 3 and out, we get the ball, and we're kind of just methodically moving downfield. Of course, you have to have that Viking scare with, I don't know if you caught this, if you caught this, but we had the Mason fumble that he wound up touching out of bounds that Jalen Ramsey returned all the way for a touchdown. Like, there has to be, you know, that catastrophe play happened. But, you know, after that, The Steeler offense was really sharp most of the day. I thought Aaron looked great. He was in complete control of what they were doing. A couple times you saw Ivan Pace creep in and they'd send pressure, and Aaron would just identify it and immediately throw to where the blitzer was coming from. And him and DK Metcalf looked the best they have all year. It was really disappointing to see a Viking defense that had been so strong the week before against Cincy, who, as you said, Ziggy, looks like maybe the worst team in football right now. They just came out and they couldn't do anything. Kenneth Gainwell looked like Barry Sanders in this game. And it was like, what's happening to our defense against this Steeler offense? So that was also a little concerning to me. Was just the Vikings have this ability to kind of like flip the switch on or off. And unfortunately, we don't really control when we can turn it on. But I was bummed out, to say the least, with the performance. And now it sets up to me a must win in Cleveland, or against Cleveland in London.
I mean, we'd better be able to win. It looks like Dylan Gabriel is going to be making his first NFL start, which I'm sure Brian Flores is going to be happy about. Like, any time a rookie quarterback has to play Brian Flores, even as a Vikings fan, I feel bad for that guy. Like, it might be the schematically most difficult defense to play against. But do I actually have confidence that, like, Carson Wentz is going to be able to get it done? I don't know.
Brown's defense is really, really good. And you're watching, like you said, Andy, you know, Jackson was out. Brian O'Neill is going to be out now. Ryan Kelly, our centers, had like two or three concussions this year already. He missed a lot of the game. At some point, when you're that banged up on the offensive line, now we have Myles Garrett on the other side of the field. It's like, oh gosh, combining that with Carson Wentz, who doesn't exactly handle pressure well, a Browns loss feels way more feasible than it did just at the start of the season. So
who would lose to the Browns? I mean,
what team would lose? No contender loses to the Browns.
No,
it is sort of funny that the Browns have played now three NFC North teams in a row, and all of them been in very different situations, right? Like the Packers were going to go to Cleveland and prove they were the top dog. It didn't happen. Detroit was going to go to Cleveland. They ended up taking care of business. Now, like, Cleveland is going not to Green Bay, but to London to play the Minnesota Vikings. Like, it's just weird that this Browns team has been connected with so many storylines in the NFC North of how they've played.
No,
I just want to go back to that Steelers game for just a second, because it was, for me, I thought going into this game, I'm like, well, you've got Brian Flores and the complete insane pressure package for Minnesota going up against a quarterback who, is just, he's dead to rights if you take away his first read and he doesn't get rid of the ball quickly and he can't run a ton anymore. I just thought that this was going to be a situation where Flores got the best, but in hindsight and just kind of after watching this game, it was almost like the opposite of like the way you beat this Flores defense is just get the ball out of your hands right away and don't let any of that pressure stuff really be able to even get started by the time, other than Redmond getting through the line immediately on that opening drive where he just there, instantaneously, like none of the other stuff had a chance to set up, and Rodgers just knew immediately where to go with the ball. I think his time to throw is the best on the season so far this year, the lowest, I should say, on the season. He just got the ball out of his hands so damn fast, it made all of the stuff that Flores does almost a moot point in this one.
No, you went into this game exactly thinking that we were going to be able to light them up. And even if the Viking offense didn't perform at the level we were hoping it would, and the Viking offense, by the way, has been basically putrid for like three quarters of two games this year and the entire Falcons game. So it's been a tough offensive watch for most of the year, but you were expecting this could be one where the defense at least holds down the fort. You know, maybe they get a big turnover. Like you said, the exact opposite thing happened. And you look back at Aaron's day, he's 18 for 22 for 200 yards, two sacks for 18 yards total. And it's not jumping out as like, oh, he lit them up and 80 of those yards came on a DK Metcalf slant. But it was just all very efficient, and they weren't the team to make the big mistake. Albeit you did, I'm sure you guys have seen the Rodgers fumble that bounced perfectly back up into a Steeler offensive lineman's hand. A very Viking Steeler-esque play. But yeah, it was just, maybe that's the way you attack these guys, is you just have to be quick, and maybe you're not having that big play down the field, but you could pick them apart in the middle of the field. And if the run defense plays the way it has against the Steelers and against the Falcons, where Bijan had 22 carries for 143 yards, all of a sudden this unit that's really scary to teams, it's okay, we found some weaknesses here. And then the Vikings, then they were totally, that were screwed if that's the case.
So where are we at with JJ McCarthy watch? I'm assuming he's out this week. Is that a foregone conclusion, or is there still some possibility there? And then after that, you know, are Vikings fans now clamoring for JJ back? Are they still okay with Wentz? Like, where are things at?
Go ahead, Ziggy.
Yeah, the updates that we're hearing about JJ McCarthy right now are that they're hoping that he might practice this week, which does not sound to me like a team that's getting ready to roll out their quarterback to face Myles Garrett behind a terrible offensive line. But if you had any hope that Carson Wentz was somehow going to be able to like recapture the magic and take this team to the playoffs, I think we've seen the old Carson Wentz problems that have stopped him from being successful at his previous stops. They're still there. So the only question, it sucks that we've got one of the oldest defenses in the NFL. It sucks as a team built to win now without a quarterback, but that's just where we are.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to find out if JJ McCarthy is going to be able to lead this team next year, or if you need to be in the market for a quarterback entering the draft, entering free agency, and create a kind of competition for him. The only way you can do that as a Vikings fan, at least as far as I can see, is to get him out there on the field and see what happens.
I think you can hold on to the hope that it all works out and that JJ, it finally clicks. Like, that's something that seems very Viking fan like, is that we're sitting back going like, all right, come on, like maybe he can figure it out this year. But that just seems very unlikely. Bringing him back this, even if he could go, if the team doctors came out like, yeah, he should be fine, I would just let him rest. No need to let him get murdered on Sunday morning. As you said, Ziggy, against Myles Garrett and company, who have been awesome this year. So what I'm hoping for, Andy, is we go out. If we beat the Browns 3-2, you still kind of have that like lingering hope for this season. And then have JJ come back and we'll see how it goes against Philly. Hopefully that goes well.
We'll be right back. Sports are all about competition. Every snap, every possession, every clutch moment matters. That same energy is what 1v1 me brings to video games. Every single day, you can watch and stake on matchups in Madden, NBA 2K, FC, and Call of Duty Search and Destroy. All the games are streamed live, every match has refs, and payouts are instant. And these aren't just random online lobbies. These are the best players in the scene, pros, streamers, and rivals, with season playoffs and the championship game on the line. Every game matters. Over 100 million has already been paid out on the app, and the community is growing fast. If you're a sports fan, a gamer, or just someone who loves having a little extra on the line, 1v1me is where you need to be. It's not just about winning. It's about the bragging rights, too. Every match has a chat going crazy, and you can back your pick in real time. Download today and use code PACKADAY. Your first stake on the app is risk-free. That's code PACKADAY for a risk-free first stake. Do not miss this opportunity.
What's crazy is that in 2024, you guys had the number 2 and number 6 graded PFF quarterbacks through the first 4 weeks of the season for 2025. Number 2 being Sam Darnold, 0.1 behind Dak Prescott, who's at number 1, and Danny Dimes, number 6 at 80.0 overall by PFF, just a little bit behind Jordan Love at number 5. So yeah, those two are playing pretty well. That the quarterback whispering worked really, really well to get those guys playing.
I'm glad that Andy froze up right there. Ziggy.
I'm not sure I could stomach hearing this. Like, seeing how Sam Darnold is playing for the Seahawks, how Daniel Jones is playing for the Colts, it's tough.
It sounded like Andy. There you go. Andy's back. We were saying it was a nice time for you to pause up right there.
Sorry about that. I think I'm back now. But yes, it's just too bad that those two aren't in Minnesota still. You know, it's just a shame.
And we lost. And the guy that we let go, this in Aaron Rodgers, goes 18 for 22 for 200 yards in the win. And it just looks like he's in complete control of the offense. So it's been a tough quarterback run over the past like 50 years. But it's been a tough quarterback run in particular over these past 4 weeks. And I've totally moved. I'm kind of numb, Andy. I'm sort of numb on the season. Like, we'll see what happens is kind of my approach. Like, F it, let's just play. And I'm expecting disaster and hoping for something a little bit better. But that's where I'm at. I like watching that game, I was like, oh, this is just going to be a tough year. There'll be some ups.
The funny thing is like, it's just weird how like certain teams have like certain DNA, like the Bears, it just feels like we'll always have great middle line, but they should have held on to Roquan Smith to be that next, but like always feels like they have great middle linebackers, like no matter what, like the Packers have obviously had their run of quarterbacks. And then for like Minnesota, it just feels like the DNA for Minnesota is like, they get the almost washed up, like Hall of Fame ish quarterback, like the Randall Cunningham, the Warren Moon, the Brett Favre, like that's the DNA of Minnesota. So like, who's the net, like Aaron Rodgers would have been the next obvious one to go to Minnesota and continue the mantle of like, we can't have our own, you know, draft and develop quarterback that we have, but we're going to take the guy that's on his last leg. And normally it's worked out. Like, I know it hasn't worked out perfectly well to get to the, you know, win a Super Bowl or whatever, but like, Cunningham had some of his best years in Minnesota, as did Warren Moon. Like, I would argue Brett Favre actually may have had the best year of his career in Minnesota, as painful as that might be for some Packers fans. And just obviously, you know, thankful for his final Brett Favre moment. And this is not Detroit, man. This is the Super Bowl, one of my favorite football moments of all time. But it's funny. Maybe that next Hall of Fame quarterback that you get one run out of is just around the corner for you guys.
But that was the thing, right? This offseason was that's where we were heading towards. And we have had some great seasons like that. But that's always the case. The roster's complete. You're just missing the quarterback. And I was talking to another Viking fan I know. He said, that's what's been holding us back, is we've never had our guy. You know, like all these teams that are winning Super Bowls, they usually have their guy, the homegrown dude who works out. And that's why this offseason, even though we didn't keep any of the players that we just listed, I was behind the move to go in on JJ, because at some point, I think Kwesi and I think O'Connell also recognized that this is the way you win. Like, you need to find your dude. And it's just kind of disappointing that JJ, again, it's two games, so like, we can't get too crazy. But through, if we're going to react based on what we've seen so far, it's not a very promising start to the, hey, let's try and find our dude for real this time experiment that the Vikings are having right now. So
it's tough to find quarterbacks. It just is.
Oh, and I'm sure it is.
Guy in the league. Okay. I get that, but no, I literally meant it that way. It really is difficult to find, like, and you see like that whole, like, look at Penix and what he went through a couple weeks ago, and Bo Nix has had his certain frustrations so far this year as well. Like, just finding, drafting, developing quarterbacks is not easy. And again, McCarthy, youngest starter in the league, and it just takes time, and nobody has any patience for anything. I'm still very intrigued with what he does the remainder of the season.
Me too. Ziggy had a good question. I'm going to steal it from Ziggy and present it to you guys. Moving forward, look at Ziggy. Moving forward the rest of this season, are you more confident in the Vikings or the Bears? The Bears now have won two in a row.
I was actually thinking about this today, not knowing that this was a question. I kind of currently have, I would probably put, again, Detroit just slightly ahead, but Detroit, then Green Bay, then Chicago, then Minnesota right now. I don't think the difference between the final two is that great. I don't think the difference between the top two is that great. And I think, again, this is probably also a prisoner of the moment of Minnesota just losing to Pittsburgh, and Chicago coming back and winning against the Raiders this past week. Just feels like there's still a couple of magical moments in Caleb every now and again that you see, like, oh, like that still seems special every once in a while, even if it's not complete yet, where I don't know that I have, like, I would be much more afraid of facing Caleb Williams right now than I would be of facing any of Minnesota's quarterbacks. I mean, that said, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison would give me much more fear, but I think Dallas's receiver core is good enough. Odunze is playing better. So I would put it slightly for Chicago, but I don't think it's anything that great that like the Vikings couldn't overcome it. And if they finished wherever ahead of Chicago, I wouldn't be stunned by it.
I think we certainly could overcome it. But the thing that worries me, and why I also have the Bears ahead of the Vikings, I think by more than you, is that the Vikings defense this year has just not looked quite the same as last year. Right, letting Michael Penix come in and beat us up. The guy who got shut out by... I'm not saying the defense has played terrible. I'm certainly not saying it's played terrible. But the defense is not winning games like it was last year. I don't think our offense is going to be winning us games either. Chicago, am I super high on them? No. Do I think they're like a playoff team? Probably not. But their offense has shown that it can win games. They have a unit that's functional enough to bring in victories. Minnesota, I just haven't seen that from us consistently enough to feel like we're going to come out ahead in the division. It could happen. we have the talent. There's injuries. There's a lot of stories you can tell. I just haven't looked at a game. Minnesota hasn't put together a game that looked as good to me as the Bears schlubbing of Dallas did a couple weeks ago.
I mean,
yeah, that's fair.
I do think the, I mean, Ziggy, we won by 40. We were up by 40 points a week ago against the Bengals.
Are the Bengals an NFL team
without Joe Burrow? We had two defensive touchdowns and five. Like, that was a game to me where the defense dominated and won the game. And I think they've been stable mostly. They gave us every chance to beat the Falcons. That was just an offensive disaster. They held them to five field goals. I feel okay about this defense, even though they struggled against the Steelers. I'm also with you guys on Chicago, but I'd say hesitant Chicago because they were on their way to kind of getting drummed by the Raiders. And that, you know, this Raiders team is not very good. So I don't have a ton of faith in the Bears. But what I will say is how many times you see the Bears be the team that walk away with the blocked kick, right? Like that does feel like there's been a little bit of a change over the past 2 weeks, and you're starting to see it come together a little bit more. Even if it's not, you know, like a blowout win against Vegas like you'd want if you were a Bears fan, you still won the game. And usually if you're a Bears fan, you give up that field goal, you walk away, and you're 1-3. You're going like, damn, like how the hell did we lose in Vegas? So there's something to be said there, and ultimately, I'm with you, Andy, on the quarter. It's the quarterback to me. I think Caleb still has that very high potential. And you mentioned plays where you just go like, wow, like how many dudes in the league can make that throw? I'm not sure. So I'd lean Chicago. But if McCarthy comes in and is just even average, I immediately flip back to the Vikings. So speaking of which,
just really quick. Yeah, I was going to say this Bears schedule, by the way, I'm assuming Jaden Daniels will be back by the time they play in week six. Chicago has the bye in week five. I'm assuming Jaden Daniels will be back by week six, and that'll be a very tough game in Washington. But they get the Saints after that. Then is Lamar back by the Baltimore game? If Lamar's back again, that's another one where it's probably just easy Baltimore. Then you got Cincinnati, New York, Minnesota. I expect Pittsburgh to come back to earth a little bit by that point. It's an interesting schedule for them all of a sudden, where before we look at it and be like, yeah, they might win four games. And now I start looking at the schedule a little bit more and being like, oh, there's maybe a little bit of possibility there for Chicago.
Isn't it amazing how that happens every year? Like we look at these schedules and then 2 weeks later, it's like, all right, Burrow's out for the year. Ravens defense is horrible. The Vikings, who knows what's going on with their quarterback situation. It's just like every single year it happens that way.
And after this game for you guys, holy cow, you get Cleveland in a neutral site game, which feels pretty good. But oh my God, you get the bye, which is going to be needed. Philly, Chargers, Lions, Ravens, which again, Lamar will be back and they're going to be desperate for wins at that point, probably. Like that is, whew. And then you get Chicago, who yeah, at home, which hopefully beat. Then at Green Bay, at Seattle, Washington, at Dallas. Yeah, that's not. And then you still have Green Bay and Detroit after that. Yeah, I'm taking Chicago as the three. Minnesota ends at the four after looking at the schedule.
No, that's part of why the Steeler loss is so sad. Is this was supposed to, like, if we were to have any semblance of being competitive this year, we kind of had to beat Pittsburgh and Cleveland and find our way to being 4-1. If this was a Viking team with last year's schedule, right, the NFC North had a pretty light schedule last year, I think we can beat a lot of the average teams in the league on any given Sunday. The schedule we have this year makes you think that we might be like a 5 or 6 win team.
There's two wins where you guys are probably, or two games where you're probably favorites right now. Cleveland this week, at New York, and then maybe Chicago at home probably is the other one. Like those, there's probably only three games where you guys are legitimate favorites going into the game. And even at New York, because it's a road game, is maybe iffy, but I bet you're still favorites in that one. I think that might be it.
Yeah. And that's when you have a team that you think is good enough to be competitive outside of quarterback, it's just like a terrible feeling of, all right, what, you know, if we win 5 or 6 games this year, and like what quarterback could we even go after in the draft class? It's like, it's a very tough spot, I think, as a Viking fan right now, as far as what this is going to be this year and beyond. But you know what? That's the life that we chose for ourselves, Ziggy. And I guess that I didn't choose it. You did. But so,
What was I thinking?
As far as the predictions go, I think we all have the Lions over the Bengals. And then do you guys think the Vikings will beat the Browns in London this week?
I'm going Vikings. I honestly would have maybe had this as a coin flip. Like they're going to need this win against the Browns after seeing this schedule. I think they get to 3-2, and then it's going to be a buckle up, I think, period for the Vikings, but I'll take Minnesota.
is we need this win. It's not coming. Dylan Gabriel is not going to make the horrendous mistake that Joe Flacco would have made that gave us the game. I've got Cleveland winning this.
Is Dylan Gabriel? Oh, he is starting. Okay, I think we'll beat Dylan Gabriel. I think Dylan Gabriel will make the horrendous mistake. Flacco may have made it as well, but if we lose to Dylan Gabriel-led Browns team in his first career start, like, I'm setting off every single panic call. That means something catastrophic is happening in Minnesota. So I'll go the Vikings. I actually think they can win this by double digits if Gabriel's starting. Famous last words, though. So, all right, we'll wrap it up there. Hopefully there are some happier days for the show moving forward as far as wins. And, you know, if there are, if we're both happy, that means the Vikings are beating the Eagles. The Packers maybe are having a little four-game win streak. Like, I think that there's a world that happens. Might just be an unlikely one, but we can hope for it. So remember, guys, please remember to like, comment, and subscribe to the Paul Farrington Show and the Pack a Day podcast. Paul, Ziggy, Andy. Well, we'll end with, I guess, Ziggy, we could give like a lame sort of skull if we want.
I don't have it in me, Paul. Not
well, Andy game. Was skulling earlier, so maybe Andy will join in on one.
I will not. I was not, but it is probably going to get clipped as such. I have to ask before we get out of here, the main important question, what's up with the dancing pineapple?
Oh, I think like my dad got it a long time ago, and his name is Pineapple Pete, actually. He actually dances. Okay. Like he does.
Oh, look at that.
But, you know, but he'll go on and on. So I guess we could end with Pina Coladas going. Go ahead, Andy. You can go and send it off.
As always, and next time, as always, go Pack, go. I'm excited to talk to you guys next week. Even after a Packers bye, hopefully you guys can get a win against Cleveland, and we'll talk about it all next week.